Rashmi Nair with you on this beautiful Tuesday, 5 degrees, feeling like one. Many people rightfully reeling from the random stabbing attack of a 16-year-old at Keele Station on Saturday night here in Toronto. Unprovoked, police say the 16-year-old was killed and one person arrested. And now discussions not only about this one person in custody, but other incidents of random attacks of violence towards uniformed officers here in Ontario, in other provinces, concerns about public safety, and then conversations about bail reform, because it's quick to jump to that. But it seems like, at least in early reports, with the person who was taken into custody in the stabbing death of the 16-year-old at Keele Station, there might have been some issues where he was wanted in Newfoundland, I'm seeing is the most recent report. So how does our bail system work? Where are the fractures? It's important for us to have this conversation, but then to also stay engaged and make efforts, follow the policy, and elect the people who will make change. We've welcomed, and I'm very happy to have this conversation, with Anthony Dube, Professor Emeritus at the University of Toronto's Centre for Criminology and Sociolegal Studies. Anthony, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me.
How would you describe our bail system? Is it effective?
Well, I think everybody from almost every political perspective would say that it needs attention. And the simple way in which people describe the problems with bail is whether it's too lenient or some people would say too tough. And I think that the problem is that it's a little bit of both, or maybe a lot of both. And one of the issues to think about is the starting point with bail, and that is that all of the people we're talking about are legally innocent. So the police have charged a person with a criminal offense, and then there's a determination as to whether they should be held in prison until their trial, or whether they should be released into the community. And those are very difficult decisions, but the starting point when thinking about it is that these people are innocent people. They have not been, they've been charged, but they have not been found guilty. And in fact, when you look at what happens to them, as I did just a few minutes ago, the most recent data that I have would suggest that of those people who do get detained, about 19% of them have all charges dropped eventually. And of those people who are detained and then found guilty, about 30% of them don't go to prison anyway. So that what we should be thinking about is this complexity and this problem. So that, you know, if a person has committed a very serious offense, especially a violent offense, and if that person, if you're worried about whether or not that person is going to either commit another offense or might not show up for trial, then of course it's easy to say that, and you know, and appropriate to say that that person should be detained in custody. But if that person has even has a criminal record, but you know, there's no reason to believe that they're going to commit another offense, or no reason to believe that they're not going to show up, then why are we detaining them? Because they are an innocent person. Yet some of those, maybe a small percentage, but you know, more than zero of them will commit another offense. And very occasionally they're going to commit a serious offense. So you're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place on this one. I mean, there is no simple solution. We would all like the person who is going to commit another offense to be locked up. But, you know, human beings aren't that predictable.
I mean, could it be if the accusation is you hurt someone? I mean, I know that that's not the way that the courts work, but if, you know, like, we're letting people out on bail, accused of a stabbing offense or accused of burglary, There's a huge difference there when it comes to, you know, the threat to public safety.
No, that's true. But, of course, the person who has hurt somebody may or may not do another offense anytime in another violent offense anytime in their life. When you look at those people who have been charged initially with violent offenses, they're no more likely to be committing subsequent offenses than anybody, you know, than other people who are there before the court. So I think it's tempting to say that, but the problem is that you're not necessarily going to get the people who you're really worried about, which is those people who are likely to be committing offenses again. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, as I said, it's easy to say, well, you've lost your ticket if you've committed a violent offense. But, you know, the reality is we let huge numbers of people out on bail who are awaiting trial for violent offenses who never commit another offense. So that if somebody pushes somebody on the sidewalk, that's a violent offense. It's unambiguous. It's a violent offense. It's an assault. And you say, well, okay, you're going to wait for your trial in custody. Now, that's a, you know, that's an enormous punitive response to that particular offense. And I guess one of the things that we have to think about when we think about this issue is that we're not exactly easy on people who are awaiting trial. I mean, just let me just give you some boring sounding statistics. But if you look at the people who are in our Canada's provincial and territorial prisons, 71% of them are awaiting trial. Ugh. If you look at all of the people who are in any level of prison in Canada, it's 44% who are awaiting trial. I mean, we have federal prisons for those who have committed found guilty of very serious offenses. Right. So 44% of our prisoners right now are legally innocent. And if you go back to the year 2000, it was 24%.
Okay,
we've gotten tough in recent years. I think we have to be clear that we've already toughened up bail substantially.
But we have 2 minutes left here, and I really want to get your thoughts on, is it punitive because we're making them wait for their trial in custody and it's taking a long time? If we sped up that trial process, if you weren't waiting months, almost a year for trial, could that make it easier to keep more people in custody?
It would certainly be better. It would certainly be better. But I think that if any of us were, you know, if somebody came to the door, if a police officer came to the door and said, you're charged with this offense, and it's a, let's imagine that it's a violent offense, and you're going to be taken to court and determine whether or not you should be held in custody awaiting trial. And you're held in custody awaiting trial. And imagine that our system was not as bogged down as it was, and your trial was, let's say, only 2 or 3 months from now. You're spending 2 or 3 months in jail, and the likelihood is that, you know, for about, you know, a substantial number of people, that the charges are going to be dropped, or that you'll, if you're found guilty, you're not going to get a prison sentence anyway. So you've been punished for a month or two, even if, as I said, if we had an efficient trial system, you'd be punished. I think most of us, if, you know, we're arrested at, you know, 4:29 in the afternoon, we're held in custody for weeks or months, even if it's only a few weeks or few months, would find that to be a punishment. And if you're innocent, I think that's a very serious problem.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I appreciate all of your insights. Thank you so much. I'm sorry we've run out of time. I also appreciate the statistics you brought to the discussion. Anthony Dube is a professor emeritus at the University of Toronto Center for Criminology and Sociolegal Studies. Thank you kindly. This is The Rush.